Did you know Night Dreams Talk Radio now has a great store? And now's the time to get that Night Dreamer, that cool Night Dreams tea, or Bigfoot mug. Night Dream Store has lots of awesome items to pick from, all for the Night Dreamer. For details, check out our show's website at www.nightdreamstalkradio.com. Is your mind really a time machine? Can you change your past, erasing your past mistakes? Can you visit parallel future realities, drawing your goals to you like magic? At Harvard University, brain imaging techniques prove the human brain is a time machine. Astrophysicist Michio Kaku says thinking is really time traveling. A book called Mind, Time, and Power by Anthony Hamilton is loaded with amazing new insights and jam-packed with thought exercises to build your brain like an athlete builds his biceps. It's the new psychology for the 21st century. Get and read Mind, Time, and Power by Anthony Hamilton. Available on Amazon or at mindtimeandpower.com.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
Night Dreams brings on the night worldwide. Did you know you can find us on your favorite app? And now you can watch us live on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to our channel and give us a thumbs up. And now, here's Gary.
And here I am, and here it is already, the 9th of March. Time is just flying by. Well, gas prices, my wife freaked out today, $5.63 a gallon near the Tacoma, Washington area. $5.63 a gallon, and it's going up. Totally, totally crazy. A lot of things in the news. The Endurance, the sailing ship in Antarctica that sunk 107 years ago, was found. And I'll tell you what, it's pretty much intact. I mean, even the gold lettering on the back of the ship, it says Endurance is there. The chain is not rusted. And what they said, the reason why, because of the cold temperatures and being down about 400 feet down, has kept, you know, the microorganisms and all that stuff from, well, destroying and all that stuff. And I don't know if you saw the pictures of it in the news today, James, but I tell you, it's kind of eerie.
I did see. It reminded me of some of those ghost ship movies you see coming out of the ghostly fog. I mean, it was spooky looking, but that's amazing that they, you know, could recoup that thing.
Oh, well, they haven't recouped it. They got, you know, films of it, getting it and recouping it and, you know, recovering it. It's going to be a different thing because, you know, that is going to be really, really hard to do. Also, this Thursday, get ready for maybe a loss of your internet, maybe your favorite TV show, maybe even your car starting, depending on where you live, and maybe when you go flip the light switch, maybe nothing will happen. There is a major solar eruption. It's going to hit the Earth on Thursday, and it's one thing we were really lucky. It was a side swipe. If it would have been a direct hit, well, then, you know, the odds are your car's starting and the electricity working because the grid system undoubtedly would have gone down. But it tells you how close we're playing craps. I keep saying that, you know, we spent all this money every which way. And one thing we need to do is, well, shore up our grid system. Now, the Senate and the Congress did give some money, but not enough to shore it up. I mean, that is really scary. And even though even if you have a generator and all that stuff, it's not going to do you any good if we ever got hit. I mean, even your electronics don't even have to be plugged in. A lot of people think, well, gee, if it's going to be a solar flare, I'm just going to unplug my computers, my TV, and all my electronics. Well, that's not going to help. And I don't know if you're prepared, James.
Yeah, I'm prepared, but you can only do so much with electronics. And you're right. Something like that hits would be back when it, like it did in the 1800s. I mean, unless you're Amish, you're going to be living like one, because there'd be no cars and no banking, no money. And I tell you, it could cause a lot of stress to even get more stressful.
Well, did you see the picture I put up on our Facebook group page of my new ride?
I did. I see those all the time.
I know you do. Where you at? But here's the point. It was kind of a joke, but it was kind of Amish, you know, wagon, you know, type of thing. It was 1 horsepower because of gas prices. You know, again, I don't think the government's being really truthful, because they're saying it's only going to go up maybe to $5, $6. Well, if that's the case, why is it $7, $8, $9, depending on where you live in the United States? That's crazy. And, you know, we don't get that much oil from Russia. But I hopefully, you know, I saw this when I lived through the gas shortages back in the 80s. There's a lot of these big oil companies were taking advantage of people. And that's when we had the shortages. And we didn't have a shortage, because I actually knew somebody that worked at the refinery, or one of the refineries. And what he told me, what they were doing is pumping oil into closed gas stations in the tanks, because they had so much oil. But yet there was a shortage. And that, you, I don't know if you guys remember, like on your license plate, you had the odd and even. So one day you could get gas, the next day you couldn't. And I tell you, and then you were limited at certain gas stations. Well, you only could get so many gallons of gas. I hope we don't go through that again.
Oh boy, yeah, that was, I was just a youngin', but I can remember that, and that was very stressful too. I mean, that's crazy how to do that. But I think these owners of the gas stations or the oil companies or whatever, they look for any inch and take a mile to price gouge sometimes, because how could gas where you are is be seven something? Now yesterday here it was 409. I don't know what it is today, but you know, that's a big difference. But even those prices are high, Gary.
I know, and you know, again, well, it depends, you know. I would hope that the administration will take the federal gas tax off temporarily to get the prices down. You know, dumping out like 30 million barrels of oil from the reserve isn't going to do anything. We use more than that every day in this country. I think dropping the tax off, and you know, in Washington State, we got the highest gas tax in the country. So, I mean, that's going to, in along with California. Also in the news, it's now 50 years since NASA sent out the Pioneer 10, you know, the satellite to go out and look for alien life with a message. And that message was our address to our planet. So, you know, maybe that's why we're getting visited more. I don't know, but Stephen Hawking said we should never give out the address, because it's like anything. You remember Halloween movies, don't you?
Oh, yeah, do I ever.
Yeah, you never want to give out your address, because you never know who's going to come knocking on your door. Well, also on Google Maps, a freaky picture appeared for a little while, and it was a beach scene on Google Maps, and there was people on the beach, but there was a ghostly child. It was transparent.
Yes, I seen that. That was spooky looking. That was, boy, you imagine getting that development and then looking at it afterward, you'd be like, what is going on here?
Yeah, but you know, that's when things like that go on Google, it doesn't stay on very long. They remove it. A man claims he has a vivid remember of his past life, including his death as a soldier in World War One. Stephen, wow. 61 years old, born in Manchester in 1961, has very firm memories of being born.
I've heard about stories like these. You know what? That's amazing, because some of these people, even as a kids, they start to remember their past life. You know, how do you process that if you're a parent? Or how do you even do it when you're older and you remember these things?
Yeah, I was going to say, born before the century and then serving in World War One and seeing himself dead and his own grave. Well, again, scientists are scratching their head. I wish I could, but my hair will fall out. about black holes. They're saying, well, black holes are proof that we are actually living in a hologram universe.
These black holes, we hear new stuff all the time. Yesterday, I just seen another thing where something's coming out of them, but that's amazing. And then yesterday, you reported on, what was it? Maybe there's a wall at the end of the universe.
Yeah, one of the, space things we sent out reached a certain thing, and they found like a wall. Now, they didn't say what type of wall it was. It could be electrical. It could be whatever. But there's like a wall, and that makes me wonder, does the universe actually continue on? Or are we, like I said last night, are we a computer program? So none of this stuff really exists, really. I don't know. We got a great show tonight. We got Robert Long on. We're going to talk about UAPs, UFOs, disclosure, and a whole bunch of stuff. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What can suddenly burn a person to a pile of powder, yet allow nearby combustibles, even clothing, to escape damage? Spontaneous human combustion can. An enigma so bizarre and frightening. Spontaneous human combustion remains hotly denied by mainstream fire science and modern medicine. In his groundbreaking book, Ablaze, The Mysterious Fires of Spontaneous Human Combustion, Larry E. Arnold explores the high strangeness of this fascinating mystery and challenges, with meticulous research, the popular consensus that spontaneous human combustion is crackpottery and myth to be debunked. Read Ablaze, The Mysterious Fires of Spontaneous Human Combustion by Larry E. Arnold. Available now on Amazon.
Hi, this is Val Von Torn of Metatron Power and Light. You're listening to Gary Anderson and Night Dreams Talk Radio.
Well, thank you, Val. And you know what? Check out Metatron Power and Light. Well, a big shout out to some of the people on chat. We have Tim. We have, well, Barb. Like always, Barb, how are you doing? Natalie out of the UK, and Nancy, and some other people. Again, I just want to thank you for being on chat. And, well, James, what can you say about our guest tonight?
Well, our guest tonight is Robert Long. Now, Robert is a longtime researcher in the field of alien abductions, and that started back in the 1980s. And then in the 90s, he worked with Bud Hopkins' Intruders Foundation, dealing with alien abductions as well.
Well, Robert, welcome to the show, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Gary. Thank you for having me on.
What part of the country are you in?
I'm in New York State, Tier, down by the Pennsylvania border.
Yeah, what's the weather like?
Got about 5 inches of fresh snow at the moment.
Oh, well, have you noticed any changes in your area with the climate in the last couple of years?
Yeah, it seems like our winters are coming back.
Yeah, maybe Earth changes. I got to ask you a question, Robert. What got you into ufology, alien abductions? What got you to focus into that?
Well, I've always had an interest in UFOs ever since I was a kid. You know, you see the Saturday matinee monster movies, and sometimes there's a UFO involved. But then, you know, you hear of actual reports of UFOs. I remember as a kid reading John G. Fuller's Incident at Exeter, and was both fascinated and scared to death by it. And I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting stuff. And it never really kicked off fully until I was given a book by my mother back in 1987, Whitley Strieber's Communion, which was all the rage back then. You know, had the typical alien head on the cover, and a lot of people were getting very funny reactions from it. But anyway, it was given to me as a gift, and I read it, and then I thought, well, I wasn't entirely sure what to think about it, but I thought, wow, this is kind of interesting stuff. And I started digging a little bit more, and I came across Bud Hopkins' Intruders. which was also published about the same time. And I read that, and it had a much more logical, scientific approach to it. And I thought, wow, this is stuff I got to start looking into a little bit more. So back in the mid-80s, I started looking at every single thing I could possibly find on not just UFOs, but specifically, you know, close contact stories of alien abduction, and it kind of went from there. You know, over the years, I've been a member of MUFON. I was the assistant state director for New York for a decade, and I was also a member of the Intruders Foundation with Bud Hopkins. Bud was a mentor of mine. Learned a lot from the man. And I was also, you know, like I say, I was the liaison between MUFON and Intruders. And everything just, you know, I've been around the country to various symposiums and like that, talked to a lot of people who have had experiences, and put together a lot of information over the decades, not just directly from experiencers, but also from other researchers, you know, like Bud Hopkins, Dave Jacobs, you know, Dan Wright, John Mack. You know, it's been kind of an interesting ride.
Oh yeah, and you know what it gets me is more people now, maybe because it's being more accepted, especially since, you know, the Navy came out with TikTok and all that stuff, and, you know, the different government people, like the head of NASA even coming out and saying he believes in UFOs. People are starting to come more out of the woodwork and sharing their experiences about seeing these craft or being abducted. And it's different from some of the stories I used to hear. A lot of the news stories I'm hearing is quite more believable than some of the older stories I was hearing back from a couple of years ago. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Well, I guess it depends on, some of the stories that you hear, especially when you go back to some of the very first stories. For example, I got to meet and interview Betty Hill. And, you know, when these stories initially came out, you know, there wasn't a plethora of information out there. So, you know, you had this story and you had various information that was also held back from the original story. For example, like Barney had genetic material removed from him, shall we say. And that was kept out of the original story. So, you know, when you got more reports in and they said, oh, yeah, and they did this to me, and they go, oh, well, that wasn't put out there. So, you know, and we start looking at this a little bit harder. And as you had more and more stories, especially with the advent of the Internet and all kinds of information at everybody's fingertips, especially the ability to fabricate at their fingertips, you know, you had more and more information and disinformation out there. So it became a little harder to define, you know, who you were working with. I've found over the years that generally the people who had a real experience are the ones that want to talk about it the least. In fact, usually I was, you know, recommended to a person from somewhere else. They, oh, you know, they should look me up and talk to me about it. You know, I got referrals from both MUFON and Intruders Foundations for people that were in my area that, you know, were having issues or having, you know, some kind of an experience that was troubling them, and just wanted to talk about it. And quite often, you know, you would talk about a number of different things totally unrelated until they became comfortable enough. I've had people that I've talked to for probably close to a year before they really opened up. Now, if you're just trying to, you know, make either a fool out of me or a story to entertain your friends, you don't spend a year doing it, waiting for the punchline, so to speak. So I've gotten to know over the years a bunch of really great people. Some call them abductees, some call them experiencers. I guess it's however you tend to foresee whatever experience that you had, and they do tend to vary widely. But all in all, they're some of the greatest people that I've ever come to know, and many of them are to this day my friends. It wasn't just about, you know, their story or helping them understand what they went through. It was also talking about just everyday life and not picking them apart and sticking them under a microscope like some researchers do.
Yeah, the thing is, these people go through trauma, and it doesn't stop. I mean, they can kind of, like, block it out of their heads, but then there's those moments where, you know, something reminds them of their abduction. And, you know, Robert, there's been so many, I've heard so many, well, they're here to help mankind, to the horror stories. And, again, like I always tell people, if you're walking down the street, and a van pulls up to you and pulls you into the van and takes you to the warehouse and decides to look inside of you. Oh, look at this. He has two kidneys. Just to, you know, you know, that person, if you could identify him, would go to prison for a long time. Yeah. And a lot of these people who, you know, claim they have been abducted and taken aboard on a craft, you know, they talk about, you know, what happened to them. And some of these people, it caused so much trauma into them that they're terrified to go to bed at night. You know, people that actually, they tell me they have loaded guns and high-powered flashlights, you know, right next to their bed because they don't want to be taken again.
Yeah, absolutely. I've known people like that. People that were scared to death to go to sleep at night, leave the lights on all night, have all kinds of elaborate alarm systems, insist that people stay with them to reduce the chance of being abducted. And, you know, sometimes they will be very proficient at numerous weaponry. They will take martial arts. They feel like they have to protect themselves. And yet, when an experience happens to them again, they rarely have any ability to stop it. And that just exacerbates the whole situation of feeling helpless. So they look for other things to try and help them feel like they have some type of a control in the situation.
Oh, yeah. You know, we have had Whitley Strieber on our show several times, you know, and he talked about, you know, he would go to bed at night. And then all of a sudden, one of these entities would, you know, come in the middle of the night and make contact with him, and not in the most friendly. Well, I guess it could be friendly, but, you know, he was also, he claims, touched in ways he didn't want to be touched by these ETs. And I tell you again, you know, you get all these different stories from different people, and whatever is going on. Like I always say, that it's not just, you know, the grays or this or that. I think there's so many different groups of humanoids coming to Earth. And, you know, that's why I think people are still being abducted. Because think about it, Robert. If they just wanted our DNA, how many people would they have to abduct to get enough DNA to fill up whatever they need? And this is ongoing, and it doesn't seem to stop.
Yeah, exactly. I had this conversation with David Jacobs one time, and you know, we were talking about, you know, this thing has been going on now for decades. So, you know, if they're just, you know, it's not like say we see a polar bear and we want to find out more about the polar bear, so we fly over top of them with a helicopter and we hit them with a tranquilizer dart, and the bear falls asleep. We examine the bear, we put a tag in his ear, a transmitter around his neck, and fly away. And, you know, a little bit later, the bear wakes up, goes home, and has, you know, a heck of a story to tell everybody back home. Similar, but different. You know, how many bears do you have to abduct or examine before you know basically everything there is to know about a bear?
That's the whole thing. Now, hey, Robert, we need to take this break. It's about 3 minutes long. When we come back, I want to talk about all these abductions. But one question when we come back, I want to talk to you about disclosure, because I'm frustrated. You know, I've been hearing about disclosure. Here we supposedly been getting it, but maybe what's going on in the Ukraine is blocking it, just like the wall was. Anyway, we'll be back with Robert right after this, so stay tuned. You're listening to Night Dreams Talk Radio.
Are you into UFOs, the real stuff? Selected by Extraterrestrials, Volume 3, My Spoken Words, William Mills Tompkins. Volume 3 covers his amazing story, what he saw in the Battle of L.A. William was a special assistant to Admiral Rico Botta to find out all about the Nazi connection to E.T.'s during World War II and connection to Antarctica. This is a must-read. Selected by Extraterrestrials, Volume 3. Available on Amazon in January, edited and compiled by Dr. Bob Wood.
No place to go, no one to talk to, nothing to do,
and nothing to do.
Just an aimless use of time, no intentions, no inventions, no intersections of inner feelings, muted by myself, deaf as the walls. Nothing to say,
nothing to say,
nothing to fear,
nothing to feel,
thing to hide,
thing to hide,
nothing to show,
show.
Just an aimless use of air, just an aimless use of air, just an aimless use of air. No intentions, no inventions, no intersections.
Did you know Night Dreams Talk Radio can promote your product or service? And it will be heard by one of the largest audiences in paranormal talk radio. Contact us at nightdreamstalkradio@gmail.com or go to our main webpage and use the contact box at www.nightdreamstalkradio.com. Night Dreams Talk Radio After Dark wants to give a big shout out to all the truckers that listen to our show. Night Dreams Talk Radio brings you talk radio like you remember, with your host, Gary Anderson.
Hey, that is me. Our guest tonight is Robert Long, and we're going to talk about, well, UFOs, people being abducted and stuff like that. My first real question to you, then we can get into some of these abduction cases and stuff, is what do you think about the so-called disclosure? Were you disappointed?
I've been disappointed every year for the last 60.
Join the crowd.
You know, I don't think if they were trying to fully disclose, I don't think they were. They even know where to start. There's been so much compartmentalization of information about the UFOs that they've come in contact with over the years that I think it's a simple case of nobody knows everything. Everybody knows a piece of it within the small group within the government. But, you know, people have waited and waited and waited, and they've also become kind of desensitized. I mean, you know, we've gotten to the point where, you know, the Pentagon goes, well, you know, we may have found some pieces to a UFO, and it's metal we don't really know about, but there it is. And everybody went, yeah, whatever. The price of gas went up. Or, you know, I mean, it has kind of gotten swallowed up by all the other stuff that's been going on in the world for the last few years. So I was really disappointed the fact that they you know, started making statements like that and releasing, you know, videos of UFOs. And people were like, we kind of know. Okay. I got other issues. So, yeah, a little frustrated with it.
Well, yeah, and that's my concern is, you know, again, you know, people want disclosure so bad. But let's face it, you know, like if you lie long enough, which governments do, you know, they do that. and they feed us propaganda a lot, too. And people don't realize that. If you lie, going back to Roswell, 1947, they first said they had the remains of a UFO and bodies. And then by early morning, that whole story changed to a weather balloon. And then it changed minorly, you know, through the years. But disclosure isn't, I don't think it's going to happen, because if you lie long enough, how do you come clean? And if you do come clean, who's going to believe whatever you say anyway?
Right, right. You know, Roswell, I think, was the first major instance where we had something extraterrestrial fall into our lap, and our original, you know, the original response, as they told the newspaper, look, we've got a flying disc. And you know, the higher echelons went, you said what? You know, we can learn from this. We can, you know, look at this technology and no, it was a weather balloon. Okay, so now we have the first nuclear air base, Roswell, in the world, and people working there can't tell a crashed alien device from a weather balloon. So, yeah, that story didn't fly.
No, but again, maybe depending on the people that were in the military, you know, I'm not going to go there. It's a bad joke. I'm not even going to start that one. But the whole thing is, you know, once, like I said, they started lying back in 47, it just continued on, just like Project Blue Book. And, you know, they had two other projects before Blue Book, and people don't realize that. And they also, like, people are all excited right now, Robert, thinking, oh, gee, Congress is going to release this information. Well, you have noticed they haven't really released anything like they promised to do. And if they can't even pass this budget thing by Friday, guess what? We're going to run out of money anyway. So if they came and get together on that, do you believe they're going to come out, you know, every 120 days and give us information?
Not in the least. Nothing we can use. They'll just keep rehashing the same stuff, the same vague fluffy stuff, and not tell us anything.
Well, you know, again, there's been Congress, you know, panels and Senate panels investigating this. This isn't the first one. There's been many, many through different administrations through the years have had, you know, these secret groups investigating this topic. And
right.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's frustrating. But again, what it's going to take is maybe abducting a president or a congressman or a senator or a UFO to crash in a populated area where they can't cover it.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. The whole, I mean, everybody has been looking for crashed UFOs, whether it's us, whether it's the Russians, whether it's the Chinese. You hear stories from around the globe where there have been instances of something crashed and was covered up and taken away, and it, you know, it's all about trying to reconstruct some of the stuff, back engineer it, and sadly apply it to some kind of a warfare device, I'm afraid. And that's one of the reasons there's just so much secrecy around UFOs. Originally, I think they probably said, you know, people are going to panic if you come out and tell them, you know, we're not the only life form, and there's others, and they're visiting us. People are going to freak out, stock market crash, and, you know, there's going to be chaos. So from there, they kind of, you know, they went on a couple different streams looking at, okay, we don't need the chaos, we don't need the panic, and the other stream being, we need to find out as much of the technical information about how these things work so we can be superior to the other countries that don't like us. So those two things together, you know, it became easier and easier to lie, because they were protecting the people. You know, they were protecting their mental state by not telling them that, you know, were being visited by alien creatures, especially, you know, and by the way, they might show up at your house and take you some night, you know. And of course, then the powers that be want to have the technical information so they can build an American-made craft that can go 12,000 miles an hour within our atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, that is true. You know, again, you know, here's the point. It really has me concerned: the amount of people that go missing. You know, there's the book of 411, the people that go missing in the National Forest. Some people tie, oh, it's Bigfoot. Maybe it's UFOs. But people are not just missing in the National Forest. If you look at the statistics worldwide, amount of people that disappear, like I always say, they find the majority of them. But there's still about 10 to 15% that just vanish, no trace of them. And those have been ruled out. They weren't killed by a murderer or killed by a serial killer. They just vanish. And that's the scary thing. You don't have to be out in your woods, or you don't have to be in your cozy bed. You could be making a road trip from New York to L.A. and never make it there. And people wondered what happened to you.
Yeah, well, vanished just means that we don't know what happened.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that a UFO scooped them up. Now, you know, I'm a UFO researcher, and specifically an abduction researcher. I can crack the joke that I've never talked to somebody they didn't bring back. But I don't think that's necessarily the case. You know, everybody that I've talked to that I believe had an actual experience usually has a lifetime of experiences starting when they're very young, and you know, they're never maimed, they're never seriously harmed, they're always brought back, sometimes a little worse for wear, you know, mentally from going through something that's such a terrible strangeness to their normal paradigm. But I'm hesitant. You know, most of the scenarios you see that people they're taken, either biological materials are removed from them for reproduction, and they're brought back. They're treated typically like a specimen, like cattle, for example. They're a breeding program, if you were. You know, like Dave Jacobs would say. And there doesn't seem to be any dire, they're not taking people and not bringing them back, is my belief. I think they probably are bringing them back.
I want to jump in here. You're familiar with Terry Lovelace, I'm sure.
Vaguely.
Okay, he was a former U.S. Assistant Attorney General, very credible lawyer, and when he was in the military as a medic in the mid-70s, him and his friend wanted to go camping. They never went camping in their life. They didn't know anything about camping. They were going to go into a state park. Well, they said, oh, it's better looking on the other side. So they went into this property. It had a chain fence. They set up their tent. And during the night, they had their fire going, and they saw this bright light coming closer and closer. And they claimed that they got tired. And they went into the tent, and they were so tired they didn't take their shoes off, whatever. And then they claimed they heard, like children, and a diesel locomotive sound. And they look out of the tent, and here's like little ETs running around. There's a craft. And next thing they claimed that they were taken aboard the craft. They were experimented on. He went through some pain. But what he also saw in the craft was these tubes with humanoids in these tubes. And he claims when he was released, there was a whole bunch of humans on board when that craft took off that weren't released.
Yes.
So
there are a certain group of abductees long-time abductees that have a long history that have been taught or trained various jobs, and in some cases even help in the abductions. I talked to a gentleman out in Michigan. He referred to himself as the bus driver. He was in charge of running a small craft that he was taught how to operate, and he would go down through a few neighborhoods, and they would pick people up. And that was his job. So he felt that, you know, he was there, and they would these abductees would see him, and they'd say, "Oh, there's another person. Must be I'm going to be okay." And so they were kind of used as a tool to help control the people that were being abducted, to make them feel that, you know, if you have a choice of being abducted by some, you know, little, you know, short gray guy with big almond-shaped eyes and you're all being all freaked out, or a guy that looks like he might live down the street and just happens to be flying a UFO and show up at your house going, "Hey, you know, you got to come with me." You know, it went over a little bit better. But yeah, when someone is a long time abductee, there is a relationship between whatever these entities are that kind of grows, and there's also a control factor, which is, you know, kind of the reason that Jim Bauk and I wrote this book, Alien Abduction, The Control Factor, that you don't always have any choice in what you actually do. It's sort of like when people are hypnotically regressed, or not regressed, but put under hypnosis, and they're told to bark like a dog. Well, even if they don't want to bark like the dog, they might end up barking like a dog. And there's a level of control when someone is abducted that they are taught and trained to do things, and they just kind of go along with the flow, and they find it works a whole lot better for them if they do, because there's really not a whole lot they can do about it. Now, that was kind of the purpose behind the book, is trying to show people that there are little things that they can do to gain control back. You know, I talked about the people that learn martial arts and learn how to shoot a gun well, and they have an alarm system in their house because they're afraid of what is going to come and take them. And so there's all kinds of different reactions that people have. But, you know, if you find a way to give a person a little bit of control over the situation, it changes their whole experience. And I'll give you a perfect example. I was working with a gentleman. He was routinely abducted. He lived in a mobile home. And the way the setup of the mobile home was, there was a 3-foot wide hallway that came down the side into the bedroom in the end, and they would always come down, three of these little gray guys would always come down this hallway into his bedroom. He'd find himself paralyzed, couldn't move, and initially, of course, terrified by the whole thing, and he felt so helpless that he couldn't ever resist. He couldn't ever do anything about it. Well, he got this idea that he was going to put up a trip wire in the doorway, but he knew if he remembered that trip wire, thought about that trip wire, they would instantly know about it, because they were connected to his mind. They would sense his thoughts and be aware of it. So he put up this trip wire, and he tried. He felt that they were going to show up that evening, and most abductees know they get a kind of a funny feeling when something is going to happen that particular night. So he put up this tripwire, and he did his absolute best to think about anything other than that tripwire. And he realized he felt it coming on. He felt the paralysis start, and here they come down the hallway. and the first one trips over the tripwire. And everything just stops. They, you know, the other two stop. They look at their, you know, their leader there, the first one down the hallway, who fell. And then they look at him. And that from that point on, it changed his entire perspective on his abduction. He no longer felt that he had absolutely no control, because he made an effort and succeeded in having a small amount of control over them. He caused one of those guys to trip. He hid it in his mind so they couldn't find out about it. And from that point on, you know, the abductions were a little bit more respectable. Let's put it that way.
Interesting. You know, but how about the people that claim that these entities walk through the window or walk through the wall or walk through the door without opening? I mean, you know, evidently they have a lot of capabilities if they want to come and get you.
Yes. You know, every year we find out more and more about quantum mechanics. And I think it's going to be a case of at some point in time, we will figure out how it's done. You know, the funny thing was about a lot of abductees, when they talk about their experience, they would come to the part where, you know, they were removed through a solid door or a solid window, or they were floated up through the ceiling. And they initially leave that part out. And if you say, well, how did you were inside. How did you get outside? Did you, you know, walk downstairs and go out the door? And they're like, well, I floated through the wall. Why didn't you say that? Well, I didn't think you'd believe me. Okay, well, you're telling me three little gray aliens are abducting you, and that's not strange enough. You told me that, but you floated out through the wall. And the idea is, you know, that's such a strange thing that we don't understand, that they hesitate to, you know, tell you that, because it's just too hard for them to believe. Now, I had one instance. It turned out to be kind of interesting. One abductee, he was always abducted. He was taken out of his bed, floated down the hallway, and taken to the bathroom. And he was taken out through the wall in the shower. And I thought, wow, that's weird. I've never heard anything like that. So, you know, I was talking with Dave Jacobs. And he said, you know, I had one that was, you know, in a different part of the country. And he said that they took him out through the wall of the shower. And like, okay, now we got two of them. We determined they weren't the same person. And so I thought, okay, now why would they do that? If they can take you out through the wall or the window or the ceiling, you know, why would they take you out through a shower? So, I was at the, MUFON International Symposium in 98. And I was talking with Dan Wright, who was head of the abduction research for MUFON at the time. And, you know, I said, you know, Dan, I got this weird thing. And I said, you know, I've had one of these, and Dave Jacobs had one of these where the person was taken out through the wall of the shower. And Dan goes, I had one of those too. And it's like, okay, now it really is weird. Now, what does a wall of a shower, what makes a wall of a shower special from any other part of a house? Any idea?
Well, you got pipes in it, number one.
Well, you could have pipes into it, but it's a lack of electrical wiring.
Yeah, you're right.
They take you through a solid door where there's no electrical wiring. They take you through a window. Whether the window's got bars or glass, they take you right through it, but it's got no electrical wiring.
Oh, I got to ask you a question, though.
Yeah.
Why aren't people being taken, instead of being taken through the door or taken through the window or for the shower, like Star Trek? you know, the next generation or the original Star Trek or what's, you know.
Apparently they haven't developed Gene Roddenberry's technology yet.
Yeah, evidently, because I would think they just would, you know, zap you and you just, you know, just go through particles and instead of going through the door.
And you know, maybe they tried that and it didn't go very well putting you back together. I don't know, but...
I got an answer for that. You know, me and my producer, we talked about that. We found the flaw. You remember the original movie, The Fly, with Vincent Price? And then they came out with one back about 15 years ago where, you know, the mad guy was creating this time thing where he could go from one pod to the other.
Yes.
And he was doing it. It was working out good. One time he goes in there and it happened to be a fly in it.
Right.
And then he turned into a giant fly. That was the drawback, which nobody seems to realize. Like with Star Trek, when they you know, get whatever they do and they get transported, right? What happens if there's an insect on you and you get reconstructed back? That's why they take you through the bathroom wall. But that doesn't happen.
Indeed.
Yeah.
But, you know, we determined, and I remember there was a report, some abductee reported, it wasn't one that I worked with, and I forget the researcher that worked with them, but they said that they were instructed as they were going through a wall to stay away from the wires, that it messed up going through the wall. And that makes perfect sense. You know, if the process, you know, they can go through all kinds of solid objects, but apparently electrical current, the flow of electrons, messes up the process somehow. So that kind of explained why, you know, they take you out through something that is generally devoid of electrical wiring. You know, for example, a ceiling. You know, one guy was always taken out through the corner of his ceiling in his bedroom. I said, are there any lights or wires or anything there? He goes, no. And wherever people were taken out through, when you start looking at whatever people were taken out through a particular portion of the wall, it's a wall that was devoid of electrical wiring, didn't have any outlets in it or something like that.
It's interesting. And how many people have you, I can only go by for the amount of people we interview on the show through the years. It seems like there's more people claiming that they have been abducted than ever. And again, like I said, maybe people are now more comfortable telling people without them thinking, well, this guy belongs in a hospital, you know. But have you noticed that the stories of the abductions are more in detail than they ever been? And is there, to you, more people coming forward and saying that, hey, I've been abducted?
Actually, from my experience, there's been a little bit of a lull. Less people are coming forward. I think the volumes of information that have been put out there, both good and bad, about the abduction experience, has created a number of people that are, well, let's just say if they are having an experience, they're making it a little more exciting, shall we say, because, you know, if you're going to do this to get some excitement out of your life, I mean, the people that I talk to, you know, that have experienced this, they don't want this. They don't want anything to do with it. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want it to happen again. They don't want the publicity. They just don't. It's something that interrupts their life, and now you've got people coming forward because they really, I think probably if some of them are fakes and they really don't have any skin in the game.
Yeah, that is. You know, we busted one back a couple of years ago. Me and my producer, we had a lady that claimed that she was abducted, and she also had the publisher. We had both of them online. And he, halfway through the show, you know, he apologized. He quit representing her. And James, didn't he also pull the book off of Amazon right during the show?
He pulled it during the show. Yes. Yes, he did. That was a one time. It's never happened before. But yes, during the show, he pulled it.
Yeah, he realized that, you know, with the questions I was asking her and what she was coming up with her stories, it was changing right and left. And he realized that, you know, he was sold a bill of, goods.
And that certainly happens. You know, when, say you talk to 500 people about their experiences.
Okay, now we have a 4-minute break coming up right now. We will touch base with this after this break. We got to pay the bills, Robert. So we will be back with Robert Long, and we're going to talk about abductions and stuff like that. And anybody on chat, if you know anybody that's been abducted or you've been abducted, if you don't want to say it on chat, you can go to nightdreamstalkradio@gmail.com. Go to our website at www.nightdreamstalkradio.com. There's a little envelope thing. You can click on that and then email me and let me know if you've been abducted or not. So we'll be back with our guests. So stay tuned right after this.
Take a journey of adventure and discovery for the enigmatic giants of the forests. Read On the Trail of Bigfoot by Mike Dupler. The author himself describes it this way.
Having found possible Sasquatch evidence, namely trees driven into the ground upside down, thought to be territory markers, led me to investigate this creature in my native Ohio. Several years and many forays into Bigfoot territory, I have found incredible evidence, which inspired my book, On the Trail of Bigfoot. Bigfoot is alive and has many fantastic abilities. The evidence is out there for all to see, but you need to know what to look for. My book will inspire those who have answered the call to seek this elusive creature, the Bigfoot. The truth is out there.
Read On the Trail of Bigfoot by Mike Dupler. Available now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and IndieBound.org. Fridays, you can call in and talk to Gary and his guest. Gary will open the call lines at 8 p.m. Pacific time each Friday. To call into the show south of the Rockies, the number is 1-253-203-6681. That's 1-253-203-6681. East of the Rockies, the number to call in is
1-253-203-6777. That's 1-253-203-6777.
Remember how great paranormal talk radio was in the 80s and 90s? Night Dreams Talk Radio brings back to you talk radio like you remember, with your host, Gary Anderson, broadcasting to you live from his secret compound deep in the great Northwest. Now, here's Gary.
And here I am. Well, we're here with Robert Long. We're talking about abductions and stuff. I don't know. Here's another thing. I am still concerned to people that have claimed that they have been abducted. They go to a hypnotist, and sometimes they go to ones who are not board certified. And then they come back with this whole story about their abduction and stuff like that. And what I'm really concerned, if you have somebody who's not certified, that doesn't know what they're doing, could be implanting thoughts in these people's minds and leading them on. And then after they come out of their being hypnotized, they believe maybe some of these things that were accidentally, you know, put into their brain.
That's always a possibility. You know, I had the chance to watch Bud Hopkins do hypnotic regressions, and he was extremely dedicated to doing it right and not leading people. I've seen him actually make a suggestion to try to lead the person away from where we figured it was going to go. You know, and if they were going to change their story to go along with the suggestion. And they say, no, that's not what happened. This is what happened. You know, so it depends a lot on each individual is different. Everyone, and not everybody can be hypnotically regressed. But some people may be regressed and very easily caused to confabulate, to even subconsciously put together a story that is perceived to be what the person doing the regression wants to hear, while others, they don't confabulate, and you ask them a very general question, and you let them go in whatever direction that they want. But in some cases, you can try to pull them back to see if they will change, and they don't. So, Bud was not a board certified to do that, but he learned the craft very well, and it was something to see. The other thing was, when someone is reliving their experience, the emotions that come out, people say, this person is faking. I've seen people scream, I've seen people cry, and just reliving the horror of the thing. And that's something I want to touch on too. So many people have had experiences that they don't remember because their memory has been blanked out, erased, rather it was done by the entities or it was done by their own brain just to protect themselves, but they don't remember the experience unless something triggers it. Okay. So someone that has a particular phobia, say, every time I go down this section of the road, I get scared to death for no reason. Or every time I go near these section of high power lines out here in the wilderness, I get all freaked out. Or a phobia that they don't understand. I had one a woman I was working with. She had to travel abroad over in England and on business, and she was sitting at this big round business table, with all these other people, and the gentleman across from her had this shiny pen, and he was flicking it around in his fingers, and suddenly she had a flashback of an alien-type hand with some type of instrument twirling it around, and she freaked out and said, "What is this? What was that?" She had to excuse herself from the meeting because she was suddenly having a panic attack and had no idea why. So, you know, the point is, when someone doesn't know and they don't remember, they relive the same horrified experience over and over and over again until something cracks it open. They have more memories, and then they start looking into it. Now, when I have people come to me, I explain to them that, you know, we can investigate your experience, but only if it's something that you're absolutely sure that you want to do, because you can't put the genie back in the bottle. Okay, if you're happy with your life and, you know, this is just a question you have in your mind, I've had some strange experiences, and I don't need to know this to have a fulfilled life, then maybe you don't need to know. Maybe it's just throw it on the back burner and continue living your life. And I've had other people that every waking moment, they have this rolling around in their head. They're terrified. There's something's going on. They got to find out. And then, you know, by looking into their experience, it can be cathartic, where, you know, suddenly they go, "Oh, well, you know, okay, I guess I can learn to deal with possibly being abducted instead of just being terrified of something I don't even understand." You know, one woman here in New York, oh, gosh, 35 years ago, I was investigating with another friend of mine, another member of MUFON, David Bodner, who's now passed. But, you know, we were dealing with this woman, and one day she just disappeared. And it turns out she disappeared because she checked herself into a psych ward. and you know, we asked her, why did you do that? She says, "Because I'd rather be crazy than to think this is actually happening to me."
Now, I got to ask you a question. You know, I hear all the rosy, you know, encounters about being abducted. You know, they took me aboard the craft. After they experimented on me, they took me to the window. I could see, you know, the stars. They showed me the craft. And then they said, you know, here's pictures of what the Earth could look like if you don't love your planet. And when you get back, we need you to spread love and tell people you got to take care of your planet or it's not going to be there. I hear those. But have you heard anything that it just upset you so much you couldn't sleep?
Well, the one thing that I've come to a conclusion about is you can't trust anything that they say or make you think. I mean, it makes a great cover story. You know, "Oh, I'm doing this for some reason because I'm going to help save our planet because they told me so." You know, it seems like a noble cause, so I guess I have to go along with this so we can help save the planet. Now, while saving the planet is certainly a noble cause, I don't necessarily think they need to abduct millions of people, horrifying them at the time over years and years and years to do this. I mean, obviously it's not working.
I don't think it is. And again, you know, again, like I said, some of these people are so terrified. Like I mentioned, they don't want to go to bed at night. Right. And you know, it destroys their relationship with their family. You know, I've heard it causes divorces in some cases.
Oh, yeah.
Because the wife or the other spouse doesn't understand what's going on. Could you imagine you wake up and you realize you were abducted, and you wake up and your wife is still snoring away when you wake up in the morning, and you go, "Honey, I was abducted by ETs last night." Mm-hmm. Now, she's going to think you had one hell of a dream, or you were smoking or drinking something you shouldn't be doing, or you're crazy.
Yeah. What's even worse is when the spouse is a peripheral observer, where they are put in a state of suspended animation, but they're not totally out of it, and they realize that something is happening. And their spouse is taken, and they're brought back, and then everybody just falls asleep. And the next morning, you know, they may or may not talk about it. Generally, they don't, but things fester until there's some type of a trigger, and suddenly there's a panic attack, and then there's, you know, what are you doing to our family? Why are these things coming to take you? And the next thing you know, the spouse is taking the children, and they're moving out because they don't want the children anywhere near this, whatever this is. Yeah, I've seen that happen. Another one that always comes to mind was an abductee who had a young son. And I want to say the son was like 6 years old. Anyway, he was abducted. The dad was abducted on a regular basis, and he was always scared to death that they were going to take his son. And he felt, I don't know, he didn't feel quite right. He got up in the middle of the night, and he walked by his son's bedroom door, and there was a blue light coming from underneath the door. And he said, my God, they're here to take my son. And he froze and he panicked, and he said he wanted to stop it, but he didn't know if he could stop it. And he stood there with his hand on the doorknob. He said it felt like, you know, minutes were going by, and his head was just spinning wildly, and his heart was beating out of his chest. And finally he found enough fortitude to turn the doorknob and open the door, afraid of what he was going to see, or expecting what he was going to see. And what he found was his son, who had a television in his room, and he fell asleep with the TV on, and here was this blue test pattern shining blue light into the room. And he went over and he scooped his son up out of the bed and just sat down on the floor with the son in his arms and cried.
Could you imagine what the father was going through, thinking that his son was being abducted? And then, you know, the relief that find out it was just the blue screen of the TV. But how many people have you interviewed and got data on where, let's say, the mother or the father was abducted, and then maybe a couple of the children were abducted, you know, and that went on for years?
Absolutely. That is the case. It follows along genetic lines. Usually, you know, if I'm interviewing someone and, you know, we start talking about, you know, weird experiences, you know, one thing, a question that you can ask that will always get an interesting answer is, tell me about the weirdest thing that ever happened to you that you could not explain. And, you know, you'll get, well, you know, there was this one instance where I saw this bright light in the sky. It hovered over my head, and then it took off. And, you know, my father had the same type of experience. He saw two or three of these during the war. And, you know, and you start researching it a little bit deeper, and you find out that there was a long history in the family. And then the kids grow up, and they say, you know, a friend of mine who was an abductee, and I remember she had a son who he was picking up his little green army men, and there was sunlight coming through the window, and you know how you have a ray of sunshine coming through the window, and you can see all the dust and everything in that ray. And he was picking up his little plastic soldiers, holding them up in the ray and letting them go, and they would fall to the floor, and he was very frustrated because they weren't floating in the ray of light.
I don't know. Now, again, have you ever saw a UFO?
Yes.
Can you tell us about how you saw it and what was it like that you remember?
Sure. I've seen a few of them. Of course, then again, when you research UFOs, you tend to look up a lot. You learn to identify, you know, satellites, stars, planets, you know, all the things that people normally see that they misidentify as a UFO. And eventually you're probably going to see something that you can't explain. I was on the New York State Thruway driving from Albany heading west to the Geneva exit, where I would get off and head down on Route 14. And this is probably late 90s. And I saw this really, I mean, this is like 6 p.m. in the summertime. So it was perfectly light out. The sky was overcast a little bit. It was backlit with clouds. And I saw this bright light. And I thought, okay, it's probably a plane coming into the Rochester airport that has its landing lights on. So, you know, like every time I see anything in the sky, I'm not happy till I identify what it is. And it didn't seem to be, you know, if a plane is in the air, it has to be attained a speed of 120 miles an hour to stay in the air. So, you know, I'm only going along 65 miles an hour. So, you know, it should be either pulling away from me or coming toward me at a much greater speed, because it didn't seem to be varying left or right, deviating from the course of the road. So I kept watching it. It seemed, if it wasn't getting farther away and I was just getting closer to it, it seemed like it was a stationary object. Well, I started watching it a little closer. So it's a wonder I managed to stay in the road and didn't have an accident. But I got to the point where this very bright orb probably looked like a halogen street lamp at, you know, like a quarter of a mile. And I'm staring right at it, and it just collapses and gone. It just folds in on itself, either that or it took off faster than my eye could register. And the sky was perfectly backlit. I couldn't see any structure. I couldn't, you know, there was no direct sun to be gleaning off a metallic surface or anything like that. It just folded up and was gone, just imploded on itself. That was one case. Another one, one night I walked out in my backyard. I live in the country. And I saw a bright light probably 300-350 yards away at treetop level. It looked like it might be a spotlight on a helicopter. That was my first thought. And I'm watching it. It doesn't seem to be moving. And there was no sound, you know, other than, you know, crickets. And I'm staring at this thing, and I'm thinking in my mind, you know, what are you? What, do something so I understand what you are. And at that particular point, this light started bobbing back and forth in kind of a half crescent, three or four times. At which point, I freaked out and went screaming in the house to grab the video recorder and get my wife. And of course, by the time I returned, it was gone. But you know, that's a couple of the instances that I myself has had.
Very interesting. You know, I always ask guests this question. You know, back 40 years ago, going on 49 years ago, I would get reports of UFOs like 25 feet in diameter, 50 feet in diameter. And now they're huge, you know, like city block big, or the size of a Walmart store for comparison. Triangles and stuff. Even my friend Art Bell, you know, him and Lamona one time saw coming back from Las Vegas. They had an encounter with this, you know, craft. It was huge and absolutely quiet. again, why the big difference in size of these craft like this, from going for many years, going even back to the 40s, you know, when the one was spotted about around Mount Rainier with that pilot, to the size of the craft now? Or is this, unless we're being visited by a new generation of ETs, I don't know.
Well, if you look at one of my favorite pictures by the Hubble telescope is the deep space shot, where they are showing a picture of literally thousands of galaxies. And, of course, each galaxy has billions of planets. And so, you know, I mean, the chance that there's the chance that there isn't life out there is astronomically small.
That, or yeah, like scientists today, or, you know, a science journal today said that, you know, that maybe, again, we're a hologram, we're not real. So I don't know.
And that's possible, too. But, you know, you've got, it would stand to make sense that, you know, there's a variety of different species that are visiting us. They probably have different craft. And, of course, we have small cars, we have large cars, we have buses, we have transports. So, you know, I would say that's probably the case because, you know, there have been reports, like I said, the guy in Michigan who was the bus driver there, you know, he piloted a small craft that came out of a big craft to go around and pick people up because, you know, you can't pick people up with a big craft because it scares the whole neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. Well, unless you're going to take the whole neighborhood. Hey, Bob, our time is virtually up. Do you have any books or anything you want, a website and all that stuff to share?
Well, you know, Jim Balk and I wrote Alien Abduction, The Control Factor, to try and help people who are having a tough time, you know, dealing with the experience, and also for people who are trying to learn more about the experience, especially people who are, like myself, you know, trying to understand the experience and learn how they can help people. The book's called, like I said, Alien Abduction, The Control Factor. It's available on Amazon Books. You can order it right online. If you got Amazon Prime, you can get the shipping for free. You know, we wrote the book to try and help people and get more information out there about it and try to keep it as scientific as possible. You know, we try to tie in what we believe is happening with as much of the today's cutting edge scientific theory as we can. But that's my spiel.
Okay. Do you have a website or anything you can share?
I do not. I am on Facebook. You know, if you look up Alien Abduction, The Control Factor on Facebook, you'll find it.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, it was a breath of fresh air tonight, and I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I try to, as you can tell, I'm very into my work.
Oh, yeah. Well, Robert, you have a good weekend that's coming up, okay?
You too, sir.
Okay, watch out for that snow. You take care.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, James, who's our guest tomorrow?
Well, our guest tomorrow is going to be Mr. Marcus Allen. Now, he's going to be talking about, did we really go to the moon? Talking about possible fake moon landing and evidence to back it.
Well, that's going to be interesting because, you know, there's been stories, even buzz, you know, his story is kind of strange lately. Maybe he's getting at that age. I don't know. But he made a statement one day here recently that we didn't go to the moon. And then he made another statement that some of it was in a studio staged because they couldn't have done what they did on the moon. Not the whole thing. He, you know, again, his story kind of waved. Yes, we went to the moon, but we needed some photo ops that we couldn't do on the moon, so we did it in a soundstage. I don't know. So we can find all that out. And then we have a great guest on the 11th. Have you ever noticed these bizarre things where, well, somebody kind of like burned up and they were sitting in their living chair watching TV and the chair is not burnt. The house and carpet are not burnt, but they're virtually gone, maybe for an arm or a leg. And then, you know, I just was reading, James, about another guy who was in his RV. And he claimed that he, out of the blue, his arm started smoking, and then it got hot. And then he ended up with third-degree burns on his arm for no reason. It's just like all of a sudden it was going to burst in flames.
Yes. You know, I've been fascinated and actually researched and studied some of these spontaneous human combustion cases, even back in the 80s. And they're so bizarre. You are correct. The one famous case, the older lady, it's pretty gross, but it's like part of her leg is there, and the rest is all burned up. But the house doesn't burn. The chair doesn't burn, but the body burns. It's like it implodes and burns up. It's very weird.
Yeah, and there was that dentist or doctor in the bathroom, and he got, you know, he had to use a walker, and he went into the bathroom, and they found his foot. And then there was a whole bunch of ash on the, again, on the floor of the bathroom, but nothing ignited. So, they feel that the flame is so intense and such a short burn that it just literally, you know, just turns the person into dust. It's really interesting. Who's our guest is going to be talking about that?
That's going to be Mr. Larry Arnold, and he is the foremost researcher on top of that subject. And listen, he is the top authority to be talking about with that subject.
It's going to be interesting. And next week, we got a lot of great guests lined up. We got guests lined up really good all month long. Again, I want to tell you, if you haven't given us a thumbs up on YouTube, please do. Let your friends know that we're on YouTube. We're on every app, Apple, TuneIn, iHeart, you name it, we're on it. Again, I want to thank everybody, you know, who's on chat here tonight. From the bottom of my heart, it makes me feel good to see you on chat. Anyway, till tomorrow, everybody have a good one. We'll catch you on the other side.